So there are lots of things to notice in the gospel reading, even though this gospel reading might be pretty familiar to a lot of you. And some of these things to notice are, they've kind of been staring at you this whole time. Hopefully you'll find a different, slightly different perspective really helpful. So first off, John the Baptist apparently is teaching his disciples to pray. And that would make sense if you're a rabbi or a teacher. You have to teach your disciples how to pray in the sense that you're going to give them your take on things. Like, to study under a rabbi is very much to take on his opinions, his ideas. And this is true in academics and the like as well, even today. And what this tells us is that apparently John's instruction is popular enough that it's made its way to Jesus' disciples. And that tracks with what we know about John the Baptist. He was immensely popular in his day, and for a while, a fair bit more than Jesus. Of course, he was also a whole lot more fiery, and that gets him into trouble. But nonetheless, Jesus then gives his disciples a very brief outline. And this is Luke's narration. And if you notice, it's a little bit more truncated. It's missing some things, supposedly, from the version that we get in, say, Matthew. And there's kind of that's a whole other thing that we're not going to get into. But there's two things immediately that we can notice from what Jesus gives his disciples. We'll start with the different lines, the different things that are accompanied by prayer, or that accompany this prayer. They tell you a little bit more about God. For example, his name is Holy. He is forgiving. He seeks to provide for his children. Because if he weren't those things, then I think Jesus probably would not have included them. And for Jesus to tell his disciples, pray like this, and to include them, tells you that he thinks very highly of these particular attributes about God. Now, most likely, what we call the Lord's Prayer is a distillation of a much, much longer prayer that was circulating around this time. It's called the Amida, and it's called the Amida, which is kind of like the standing, like because you stand up when you pray it. It takes like 17 or 18 minutes long to recite it from memory, and it's just one of many different prayers that a good, observant Jewish person, both then and now, will say throughout the day. And it seems as though Jesus, like just based on content, the Lord's Prayer is a lot, it takes from a lot of those prayers, and especially that really long one, and boils it down. But for our purposes today, first off, it tells us something about the character of God. Now, of course, I've skipped the more explosive or the more maybe interesting part, is that Jesus begins his prayer with our Father. There are a scant few, references to God as Father in the Old Testament. In other words, it's pretty rare, but it's not completely unheard of. Later Jewish writing will take this idea after Jesus, and they'll kind of run with it a little bit more. But it's not a common way for Israelite Hebrew/Jewish people to think about God, at least at the time of Jesus. Now we, of course, like that's almost where we start because of the Lord's Prayer. I know. I just can't help that. He's just agreeing. It's great. Now, That is actually more significant than I think we often realize. Because if Jesus identifies God as Father, he's taken something familiar to us, and he's now kind of using that as like an analogy, metaphor, something like that, to give us a way to talk about God. And the reason why this is significant is that we, just as human beings, will have a natural tendency, and we'll do this in ways that aren't always obvious, to take that thing familiar to us and apply those attributes to God. Now, that's a really complicated way of saying, when we call God Father, our natural inclination is to project our own understanding and experiences with our Father onto God. And I mean, it's just a normal process. Just like if, I don't know, say I imagine, and this is not true, but imagine I hated baseball. I don't. But if I hated baseball, every time I hear the word, or hear take me out to the ball game, I'm just going to, it's going to affect me. Well, in the same way, like, depending on your relationship and your experiences with your Father, that might impact the way you understand God when you call God Father. And it's just something to be aware of, but there's more to it than just that. If dad was a problem, dad was absent, dad was extremely harsh, dad was kind of the sovereign king of his little kingdom, if dad was a taskmaster, dad was just a mean drunk or something like that, then that will shape the way you understand God, or at least it has a really strong potential to. I mean, and likewise, if your dad was very kind and loving and compassionate and involved and present, then the path to understanding God as Father is going to be less complicated for you. But make no mistake, unless I am sorely mistaken, everybody here's father was human. And as a result, it's at least going to be a little bit tricky. Because thinking about God as Father, it will be natural to think, well, how much is God actually like my dad? Now, for what it's worth, I have a great dad. I love him. And we have a great relationship now and when I was younger. And I am a father. Please don't ask Nash about how that is. Because he might tell you. Now, Jesus seems to be aware of this, or at least something like it, because he identifies God as Father, which is, again, it's not completely new, but it's not common. And then he starts in this prayer by telling you what you might ask him for, gives you a little insight into what God is like, but then he goes on and he gives you some parables, metaphors, analogies about prayer. And the bottom line of that section that follows is what? God is generous. God is gracious. God wants to give his children what they need. And we'll work through a little bit of what he said to get there. Because he first starts with a very familiar image or story. This is an era and culture where hospitality is of the utmost importance. If you have somebody coming in to town, you have to feed them. You have to house them. It would be incredibly shameful if you didn't. And so Jesus tells an imaginary story, or kind of a parable, of, hey, say you've got a friend that came in to town and you've got nothing to offer him. He doesn't need to say that's shameful. Everyone knows. So it's late at night, so what are you going to do? You're going to go to a friend, and you're going to start banging on his door. And these are mostly one-room houses, and so dad would probably sleep by the door, you know, protected or something like that. And then you'd have the children and probably the wife at the end of the row who really does not want to be woken up. And, you know, bang, bang, bang. Hey, come on, man. My friend came in town from Bethlehem. I need 3 loaves of bread. There's no significance, I think, in that 3. That's just sort of like how much you need to have a meager meal. So, hey, hook me up. I know you have some. I can smell it. Or, I don't know, I'm making that part up. But whatever. Now, in Jesus' story, his friend will, I think, be quite reasonable. He'll say, go away. Like, dude, my kids are finally asleep. If I go get, you know what's going to happen, and nobody's going to be happy. No. But in Jesus' story, the guy persists. Come on. And eventually, the guy inside goes, fine. And then goes and gives him his bread. Now, in Jesus' story, there's a certain internal logic there. In Hebrew, it's called kal vachomer. And in English, it comes out as how much more. So if this guy does not want to help his friend out, even though he's his friend, but he's willing to because he's getting annoyed, how much more does God want to give to his children who need something? That's how that story works. Now, let's sit there for a minute, because this gives us a little bit of a window into prayer in the sense that persistence is potentially important. And there is a long-running Jewish tradition of persistence in prayer, and maybe it was intended, I would like to assume it was, but we got a glimpse of that in our Old Testament reading with Abraham. So Sodom and Gomorrah, prophet Ezekiel says that the city is wicked because it was deeply oppressive to the poor in that region. And God sees the wickedness and is like, all right, they need to go. This is over. I can't let the evil spread. And what does Abraham do when he finds this out? He goes, hold on. What if there's 50 people there who are good? And God says, okay, if there are 50 people, fine. And then Abraham goes, okay, well, what about 40? And, okay, what about, you know, so on and so forth. And he gets down to 1. He would be an incredible salesman or negotiator. That actually is kind of a model of certain Jewish traditions on prayer. Not in the sense that you're just bargaining with God as though he were auctioning something off, but there's a sense of reverence, because Abraham is also like, hey, you know, hey, far be it from me, but maybe just hear me out. But there's also a sense of familiarity. Abraham is not afraid to be persistent. And that's He is honored in that story for that purpose. Another example would be Moses. Moses has led the Israelites out of slavery in Egypt. He is now on Mount Sinai. The Israelites are, shall we say, misbehaving. They've got the golden calf and Aaron, Moses' own brother, saying, here is your God that rescued you from slavery. And God, as you can imagine, is not excited about this. To the extent that he's like, that was the number one rule. Don't do that. And he tells Moses, I'm wiping them out. This is ridiculous. And what does Moses do? Well, if you're not familiar with the story, Moses, like Abraham, will eventually do later. I'm sorry, I got those reversed. Like Abraham did a long time ago, said, hey, time to put on our public relations hat. Because if you, I mean, you brought these people out to be your nation. It's not a great look if you just kill them. Like, in fact, that's going to say something about you that's not true. And God relents. Again, there's a sense of reverence, but also a sense of familiarity, persistence, perseverance. Now is a fascinating counterexample. And this is from now blessed memory Rabbi Jonathan Sacks, who points out that in the flood narrative, when God reveals to Noah that evil has run too deep and spread too much, that he's got to hit a little bit of a reset with humanity. And just like God was going to do with Moses, he's going to use Noah and his family as kind of that do-over. What does Noah do? Nothing. He just says, okay, I guess I should start building this boat. And there is a rabbinic tradition that looks at Noah as in some ways the villain, because he didn't do what Moses and Abraham did. He didn't, to put it mildly, get into God's face and bargain or intercede for people. And I think these stories, or at least the style or these ideas about prayer, are why Jesus then immediately launches into a parable about persistence right after he has started talking about prayer. That there's a certain kind of engagement that happens with when you pray to God and ask for the things that you need. And then if you're like me, you'll immediately see the flaw in the way that we've just talked about prayer briefly. Because, and don't raise your hands, how many of us have asked and just even pleaded with God for something? The answer was just no. Because how do we square that away with the fact that Jesus will then say, seek and you will find, ask and it will be given to you, knock and the door will be opened? Well, that's obviously not always true. And in fact, in not that long, Jesus is going to find himself in the Garden of Gethsemane saying, Father, if there's any way, take this cup from me. And God's answer is no. So how do we square that away with this almost certainty that Jesus speaks with in terms of God giving you what you ask for? I think part of that answer has to do with this idea of prayer as perseverance. I mean, I think we can all agree God is not a vending machine where you put money or time or whatever it is in, and then you press the button and then you get what you want. Like, God just doesn't operate like that, unless he treats you very differently from me. But God is not like a lottery where you just get lucky. But God is a person. And prayer is an invitation to engage. And so we would then again ask, well, what kind of person is God? Jesus has just identified God as Father, which can be complicated. He's invited us to be persistent. In what we call the Lord's Prayer, he has given us glimpses into God's character, meaning he wants to provide and protect his children, or provide for and protect his children. And then after this kind of funny story of this guy getting bugged in the middle of the night, he then says, well, okay, which of you, if your child asks for bread, meaning like sustenance, like they need that or they die, would you give them a snake? I mean, the answer is no, obviously. Although growing up, I had a pet snake, and I honestly, I'd rather have the snake than bread, depending on the breed and that kind of thing. Or if a child asks for an egg, you know, something to eat, again, would you give them a scorpion? No. Or would you give them a stone? There's a fish in there somewhere. This is where my mind is right now. It's basically just scrambled eggs. And not the egg that was for the scorpion. But the point being is that no, of course, nobody here, if their child asked them for something to eat, would give them something awful. And then Jesus again doubles down and says, if you know how to provide for your children, and you are flawed human beings, how much more will the all-creator of the universe want to give you what you need? Notice this is also about what we need, not what we want. And I think the path of maturity as we grow in Jesus is to learn the difference between what I need and what I want. I want another guitar, because why not? I do not need another guitar, or so my wife has told me. Like a lot. And that's fair. I need food. So do you. I need to be loved. So do you. I need to be a part of something greater. So do you. That's a human thing. I don't remember who said it, but I need to be a part of a story. Because, and I can't remember who I'm quoting, we as human beings tell ourselves stories so that we can live. Prayer is an invitation into that engagement. Now, we'll kind of go back to where I started, and this is where I'll end. Jesus gives us, under the guise of instruction about prayer, insight into who God is. And if we have to distill God, or if somebody were to ask you, who is God, or what is God's main attribute? What is his main feature? Like if I ask you, what is my main feature? You'll say white glasses. What is the first thing that I should know about God? How would you answer that? Because just like, what's your father like? Because that's going to tell me how you might understand God as father. What is God like is going to tell me how you perceive the world around you. So if God's main thing is that he's all-powerful, sovereign, then the danger is that we end up worshiping power. But as we see how Jesus has explained some things and given us insight into the character of God in the context of prayer, we learn that he's a really good father. He's gracious. He's forgiving. He's loving. He provides. And I'm just pulling that from the Lord's Prayer. We also get a sense because of the way that God, or the way that Jesus, okay, it's complicated, same thing, but whatever. I made that same mistake first service. The way that Jesus constructs these little stories or these little, like, which one of you kinds of sayings, that there's also, there's a desire on God's part to be that for us. And so what starts out as his disciples saying, hey, Jesus, can you just teach, like, what should we say? Ends up becoming kind of a tender, kind revelation about who the all-creator of the universe is. Like a father who just wants to give his kids something to eat. He offers us his grace and his compassion and his forgiveness. Whatever prayer looks like, and however you pray, I think Jesus wants us to start there. Amen.